hard in a storm like this, yet still compelled to press on, even as winds threatened to pitch her forward off the road. She plowed down Phoenix's six-lane boulevards, the empty, optimistic cross streets of a car culture now so drifted with dust that vehicles moved in single file between dunes, glued to one another's taillights as they navigated the hillocks of a city being swallowed by desert. At last she spied the dim flicker of high-rise lights, the sentinel blaze of the Hilton Six, and the even stronger glares of the construction lighting of the rising Taiyang Arcology. The half-alive monster looming over all things Phoenix. The Taiyang struts gleamed like ghostly bones in the haze of flying dust. Lucy pulled the truck over to what she decided was a curb and parked, leaving the truck lights on, hazards flashing. She grabbed her headlamp out of the glove box, then leaned against the door, forcing it open against the buffeting wind. As she made her way into the glare of her own headlights, she found flares on the road. She traced the line of flickering magnesium glows. Ahead, human forms rose out of the darkness, men and women in uniform, flashlight beams waving wildly, cruisers stroving red and blues. She forged closer, her breathing loud in her ears, her mask wet on her face from the moisture of her lungs, pushing past cops vainly struggling to control a crime scene that was blowing away. Blood rivers and dust intermingled on the boulevard, a mini badlands of murder becoming drifted, muddy, and coagulated. Lucy's headlamp illuminated a pair of corpses. Just more bodies, she thought. But then her headlamp caught one of the faces, black with blood dust scabs and nearly covered with a drift. She gasped. All around her, cops and techs milled, but they had their hands full fighting the storm, trying to see through their own city-issued masks and filters. Lucy pushed closer, trying to prove to herself that her nightmares weren't real and alive and true. But even without his eyes and his skull, she knew him instantly. "Oh, Jamie," she whispered. "What are you doing here?" A hand grabbed her shoulder. "What are you doing here?" The cop shouted, his voice muffled by flying sand and filter mask. Without waiting for an answer, he dragged her back. Lucy fought for a moment, then let herself be hauled behind crime scene tape that was flapping and flying as the cops unwound it. Caution. Cuidado. Wei Xian. Caution. Cuidado. Wei Xian. Caution. A warning she tried to give to Jamie just a few weeks before, right inside the Hilton Six's bar, where all the people were now pressing their faces against the glass to get a better view of his death out here on the sand-blasted street. He'd been so completely sure of himself. They'd been drinking in the bar of the Hilton Six. Lucy, grubby from a week without a shower. Jamie, so polished that he almost glowed in the low light. Trimmed nails, clean blonde hair, not stringy with grease like hers. Not gritty with the desert that was drifting across the sidewalks just outside their floor-to-ceiling windows. Jamie could afford all the showers he wanted. He liked to flaunt it. The bartender was shaking something cold and green into a martini glass, the silver of the mixer clashing with skull rings of gold on his brown fingers. The skulls had stood out to Lucy, because she'd looked up from them to meet the bartender's dark brown eyes, and known that if it weren't for Jamie's polished presence, the bartender would have run her out a long time ago. Even aid workers had enough grace to scrub up before they came down to the bar to drown out the memory of their day's work. Lucy just looked like another Texas refugee. Jamie had been talking. I mean, John Wesley Powell saw it coming way back in 1850, so it's not like no one had warning. If that fucker could sit on the banks of the Colorado River 150 years ago and know there wouldn't be enough water to cover everything, you'd think we'd have figured it out, too. There weren't as many people then. Jamie glanced over at her, blue eyes cold. There are going to be a lot fewer now. Behind them, the low murmured conversations of aid workers and UN intervention people mingled with the surreal strains of Finnish dirge music. USAID, Salvation Army, Red Crescent Drought Specialists, Doctors Without Borders, Red Cross, and then others, Chinese investment bankers from the Taiyang, down out of their arcology and slumming. Halliburton and Ibis XX, doing water prospecting, insisting that they could frack aquifers into gushers if Phoenix would just foot the bill. Private security guards off duty and on, bureaucrat-level narcos. A few well-heeled Mary Perry refugees, speaking in low tones with the coyotes who would spirit them across the final boundaries and lead them north. That odd mix of broken souls, bleeding hearts, and predators who occupy the shattered places of the world. Human spackle, filling the cracks of disaster. Jamie seemed to read her mind. They're all vultures, every one of them. Lucy sipped her beer, pressed the glass to her dust-caked cheek, savoring the cool. A few years ago you would have said the same about me.
No.
Jamie was still watching the vultures.
You were meant to be here. You're one of us. Just like all the other fools who refuse to see where this thing is headed.
He toasted her with his vodka.
Oh, I know where this is headed.
So why stay?
It's more alive here.
Jamie laughed at that, a bark of cynical humor that cracked the muffled dimness of the bar, startling patrons who had only been pretending relaxation.
People only really live when they're about to die, he said. Before then, it's all a waste. You don't appreciate how good it is until you're really in the shit.
They were quiet for a while. Then he said,
We knew it was all going to go to hell, and we just stood by and watched it happen anyway. There ought to be a prize for that kind of stupidity.
Maybe we knew, but we didn't know how to believe, Lucy suggested.
Belief, he snorted. I could kiss a thousand crosses. Fucking belief.
Again, bitterly.
Belief is for God, for love, for trust. I believe I can trust you. I believe you love me.
He quirked an eyebrow.
I believe God is looking down on us and laughing.
He sipped his vodka, pinching the martini stem between his fingers, turning it idly on the bar, watching the olives go round and round.
This was never about believing. You think someone like Catherine Case up in Vegas believes things? This was about looking and seeing. Pure data. You don't believe data. You test data.
He grimaced.
If I could put my finger on the moment we genuinely fucked ourselves, it was the moment we decided that data was something you could use words like believe or disbelieve around.
He waved out at the dusty avenue beyond the windows. Texas Bang Bang girls gesturing desperately at cars cruising slowly past, party slummers in from California, and fivers down from the arcology picking off the desperate.
This should have been about testing and confirmation, and we turned it into a question of faith.
Fucking Mary Perry's praying for rain, he snorted. No wonder the Chinese are kicking our ass.
He went quiet again, then said,
I'm tired of pretending we've got a way out. I'm tired of suing pissant water ticks for pumping out our aquifers, and I'm tired of protecting goddamn fools.
You've got a better idea? Jamie looked up at her, blue eyes twinkling.
Definitely.
Lucy laughed.
Bullshit.
You're in this just as deep as the rest of us.
Zoner for life? That's what you're saying?
If I am, you are for sure. Jamie glanced back at the other tables, then leaned close, his voice notched lower.
You really think I'm going to stay here? Just keep working for Phoenix Water or Salt River Project, hope they're going to be able to take care of me?
Why, is someone hiring you? SNWA or San Diego give you some kind of offer? Jamie gave her a disappointed look.
A job? You think I just want another job? Like I'm going to take some buyout from the California Department of Natural Resources or something? You think I want to work for some other water department's legal office? I'm not going to push paper all my life.
You don't have much of a choice.
There aren't a lot of people offering plane tickets out of Arizona.
You know, Lucy, sometimes I think you're about the smartest person I know, and then you say something like that, and I realize how dumb you are. You think small.
Did I ever tell you you have amazing people skills? Lucy asked.
No.
Good. I would have been lying. But Jamie wasn't deterred. He had the maddening smile of a prophet sure of his comprehension of the workings of the heavens, and it made Lucy subliminally anxious, even as they continued drinking and trading comfortable insults. She'd seen preachers smile the same as Jamie and Mary Perry revival tents when she'd asked them why she thought God would give them their rain when all the climatologists were predicting less, not more.
Rain is coming, they'd say knowingly. Rain is coming.
They knew how the universe worked. They'd unlocked all God's secrets. And now Jamie looked the same way.
What have you got? Lucy asked warily.
What if I told you I'd found a way to break the Colorado River Compact?
I'd say you're full of shit.
How much would you pay to end up on top? Jamie pressed.
Lucy paused, beer halfway to her lips.
You're serious?
Dead serious.
What if I gave you senior rights that you could take right up to the Supreme Court? Rights that you could count on the feds enforcing? No bullshit. No he said, she said. No Vegas did or didn't pump how much water. No farmer did or didn't divert how many acre feet into his field. None of that. The kind of water rights that could get the fucking Marines posted on every dam on the Colorado River and would make sure the water spilled straight down to you. The kind of rights that would let you do what California does to towns all the time.
He was looking at her intently.
What would you think of that? How much would you pay?
I think you're high, and I wouldn't pay you a single Chinese yuan.
Sorry, Jamie, I know you. You're the one who had sex with me just because you wanted to see whether women were any good.
Jamie grinned at that, unrepentant.
But what if I were telling the truth?
About being straight or about water rights?
It was just an experiment.
You're such an asshole.
But still, Jamie wouldn't let up. You ever wonder how a city like Las Vegas, a city that should have dried up and blown away about a million years ago, does so well, and we're the ones flapping around like a chicken with our head cut off?
They're a hell of a lot more disciplined.
Hell yes, those fuckers know how to gamble, right? They look at their cards, their shitty 300,000 acre feet of water from the Colorado River, and they know they're fucked. They don't lie to themselves like we did. They don't try to bluff like they have something they don't.
So what's this got to do with rights?
I'm saying we're all playing the same game.
He began pulling the olives off his toothpick and eating them.
I do paperwork all day long. I see the game. I dig up the underlying rights. I file the motions. And all of us are doing it. Doesn't matter whether you're California or Wyoming, Nevada or Colorado, all of us are seeing what we can get away with, without the feds noticing and declaring martial law on us. And if you've got someone like Catherine Case playing for your side, you do okay.
Better than the political hacks we've got down here, anyway. He stopped eating his olives and favored Lucy with a speculative eye.
But what if I told you that everyone is playing the wrong game?
I want to know what that's supposed to mean, said Lucy, exasperated.
I found a joker.
Jamie smiled, leaning back, looking like a satisfied cat.
You know, you sound like someone trying to sell real estate in New Orleans.
Maybe.
Or maybe you've been stuck in the dust so long you can't see the big picture.
And you do? Again, he flashed that maddening smile.
I do now.
Except now, Jamie was dead in the dust. With his eyes pried out of his head, and the big picture he thought he'd seen, gone. Lucy sought another way to return to his side, but the cops were serious about keeping bystanders at bay. And now the reality of her situation was settling in. Her better judgment returning too late. Jamie's body didn't matter. The only ones who mattered were the living ones, the cops, the slow procession of drivers passing around the flares, the EMTs all hunched and bug-eyed behind their masks, waiting to be told that they could cart away the bodies, the faces in the Hilton 6 bar pressed to the glass, watching the action. Among them, anywhere, there might be a person who wasn't looking at the carnage, but at her. Lucy started to back away. She knew this kind of killing. She'd seen it before. Everything about it was a feedback loop, building itself into something bigger and more horrifying. She wondered if she had already been picked out, if it was already too late to run. She fled the scene, wondering if the city was finally going to drag her down and swallow her, just as it had swallowed Jamie. "Who did this to you, Jamie?" she wondered as she fled. And then, the more important question. What did you tell them about me? Chapter 3. A ragged gouge cut the face of the Red Cross China Friendship water pump, some kind of tool dug in, furrowing carbon plastics like her daddy's plow had once ripped San Antonio dirt, except deeper and more angry. Maria wasn't sure who had attacked the pump or what they thought they'd accomplish. Fucking hell, that pump was armored. She'd seen a bulldozer bounce off its concrete defenses. Sucker wasn't going nowhere. It had been stupid of someone to try to cut it, and yet someone had. The price blazed through the scratched plastic. $6.95 a liter. Y4 Gongjin. Gongjin meant liter in Chinese. Y was for yuan. Everyone who lived anywhere near the Taiyang Arcology knew that number and that cash, because all the workers got paid in yuan. And the Chinese had built the pump, too. 'Cause friendship, right? Maria had been learning Chinese. She could count to 1,000 and write the characters, too. Yi, er, san, si, wu, liu, qi, ba. She'd been learning the tones. She'd been learning as fast as she could from the disposable tablets that the Chinese passed out to anyone who asked. The liter price glowed in the hot darkness, blue and indifferent, blurry from the human anger that had been hacked into it, but clear enough. $6.95 a liter. Every time Maria saw the ripped face of the pump, she thought she knew the person who had done it. Dios mío. She was that person. Every time she looked at the pump's cool blue numbers, she felt rage. She'd just never been lucky enough to swing a tool that had a chance of hurting it. You needed something special to make a cut like that. Not a hammer. Not a screwdriver. Maybe one of those Yokohama cutters that construction crews used on the Taiyang, back when her father had still worked there. They'd turn I-beams to dripping water. He'd said, turn steel to lava, mija. You can't believe it, even when you're standing right next to it. Magic, mija, magic. He'd shown her the special gloves he used to keep from slicing off a finger, glittering fabric that gave him a second and a half before his hand disappeared in a puff of smoke. Magic, he'd said. Big science. Who cared what the difference was? The Chinese knew how to make big things happen. Those cabrones knew how to build. The Chinese had money, and they made magic happen. And they'd train anyone to use their tech who was willing to sweat a 12-12 shift. Every morning as the sun was starting to burn the sky blue, her father would return to Maria and describe the miraculous things he'd seen the night before while working on the high exposed beams of the Arcology. He described the massive construction printers that poured solids into form, the shriek of injection molds, the assembled pieces being craned up into the sky. Just-in-time construction. They had silicone PV sheeting that they poured over walls and windows to generate power, dumped it on like paint, and next thing you knew, you were full electric. None of the rolling brownouts that hit the rest of Phoenix for the Taiyang. No way. Those people made their own power. They fed their workers lunch.
I'm working in the sky, he'd said. We're all good now, mija. We're going to make it. And from now on, you're going to study Chinese, and we don't just got to go north. We can cross the ocean, too. The Chinese, they build things. After this job, we can go anywhere.
That had been the dream. Papa was learning how to cut through anything, and soon, he'd be able to slice through the barriers that kept them trapped in Phoenix. They'd cut their way through to Vegas, or California, or Canada. Hell, they'd cut a path all the way across the ocean to Chongqing or Kunming. Papa could work the upper Mekong and Yangtze dams that kept water for the Chinese. He was going to build. With his new skills, he could cut through anything. Fences and California guardies and all the stupid state border control laws that said you had to stay in a relief zone and starve instead of going where God still poured water from the sky.
A Yokohama cutter slices through anything, he'd said, and snapped his fingers. Just like butter.
So maybe it was a Yokohama cutter that they'd used on the Red Cross pump. But even that tool hadn't gotten them a drink. You could cut your way to China, maybe, but you couldn't cut your way to a cool glass of water in Phoenix. Maria wondered what price had driven the person to go after the pump. $10 a liter? 20? Or maybe it had only been $6.95. Just like now. But to those people, $6.95 had seemed like their first Phoenix police baton to the teeth. Something they just couldn't accept. Maybe those way back when people hadn't known that $6.95 was going to be as good as it got, forever after. Didn't know that they should have been counting their blessings instead of taking a cut at the pump.
Why are we here? Sarah asked for the fifth or sixth time.
I got a hunch, Maria said. Sarah made a noise of disgust.
Yeah, well, I'm tired.
She coughed into her hands. Last night's storm had messed with her chest more than usual, bits of dust burying themselves deep in the dead-end branches of her lungs. She was coughing up blood and mucus again. More and more, the blood was a common thing that they never spoke about.
I want to see if something happens, Maria murmured, her eyes never leaving the pricing gauge.
Is this like when you dreamed about the fire and the man who walked out of the flames without getting burned? Like Jesus walking on water, but with fire? You told me that was going to happen, too.
Maria didn't take the bait. She had dreams, that was all. Her mother used to call them blessings, whispers from God, the wingbeat of saints and angels. But some were scary, and some didn't make sense, and some read clear only afterward, like when she dreamed of her father flying, and she thought it was a good dream about them getting out of Phoenix, and only later found out it had been a nightmare.
You want to see if something happens, Sarah muttered resentfully. Her shadow moved in the darkness, trying to find some part of concrete that hadn't absorbed the day's heat. Finally, she gave up and sat on the wagon, pushing aside the plastic bottles that Maria had scavenged. They plunked hollowly against one another.
So now I got to lose my beauty sleep, 'cause you want to hang with Texans?
You're a Texan, Maria said.
Speak for yourself, girl. These Xagua pendejos don't even know how to take a bath.
Sarah spat something black onto the pavement as she watched the movements of the nearby refugees.
I can smell them from here.
You didn't know how to use a sponge and bucket either till I showed you.
Yeah, well, I learned. These people are dirty, Sarah said. Just a bunch of dirty fucking Texans who don't know shit. I ain't no Mary Perry.
In a way, it was true. Sarah was schooling away her Dallas drawl, scraping away Texas talk and Texas dirt, scrubbing and scraping as hard as her pale white skin could take the burn. Maria didn't have the heart to tell her that no matter what Sarah did, people saw her Texas coming from a mile away. The point wasn't worth arguing. But for sure, the Texans around the pump stank.
They stank of fear and stale sweat that had moistened and dried. They stank of clear sack plastic and piss. They stank of one another from lying crammed together like sardines in the plywood ghettos that they'd packed in close to wherever the Red Cross has spiked relief pumps into the ground. The blocks around the Friendship Pump were an oasis of life and activity in the drought-savaged wilderness of the Phoenix suburbs. Here, among the McMansions and strip malls, refugees clogged parking lots and streets with their prayer tents. Here, they erected wooden crosses and begged for salvation. Here, they posted numbers and names and pictures of loved ones they had lost on the bloody roads out of Texas. Here they read handbills passed out by street kids hired by the professional coyotes to get out the word. Guaranteed entry. 3 tries into California or your money back. 1 prize, all inclusive. Truck to border, raft and floats. Bus or truck to San Diego or Los Angeles. Meals included. Here, close to the relief pump, there was life. Bonfires burning 2x4s hacked from the husked-out corpses of 5-bedroom houses. The tents of the Red Cross, sway-backed with the recent storm's accumulated dust. Doctors and volunteers wearing filter masks against the dust and valley fever fungus, tending to refugees lying on cots, and crouching over infants with cracked, sandy lips as they took saline drips into their hollowed bodies. "So what's this about, girl?" Sarah asked again. "Tell me why I'm out here when I should be with a client. I got to earn if I'm going to make the vet's rent."
"Shh," Maria motioned her friend to keep her voice down.
"It's market price, girl."
"So? It don't never change."
"I think sometimes it does."
"I ain't never seen it."
Sarah's miniskirt rustled again as she tried to find a more comfortable position. Maria could make out her shadowed silhouette under the dim blue light of the pump's price readout, the gleam of the glass jewel in her belly, the tight little half-shirt meant to show off the cup of her breasts, and the plane of her sleek stomach. The promise of a young body. Every bit of her clothing trying to make Phoenix give a damn that she was here. "We're all trying," Maria thought. "We're all trying to make it." Sarah shifted again, shoving aside Pure Life and Soft Water, Agua Azul and Arrowhead labels. A bottle fell out of the wagon and bounced on the dusty pavement with a hollow rattle. Sarah reached down to pick it up.
"You know, they let you just get water for free in Vegas," she said.
"Fang bi." Maria used the Chinese word that she'd learned from the construction managers who had worked with her father. "Bullshit."
"Fang bi yourself, loca. It's true. They let you take it right out of the fountains in front of the casinos. That's how much water they got."
Maria was trying to keep her eye on the pump and its price.
"That's only for the 4th of July. It's like a patriotic thing they do."
"Nuh-uh. Bellagio lets you take a cup anytime. Anyone can go and get a cup of water. Nobody never minds a nun." Sarah tapped the empty Aquafina bottle on the edge of the wagon, an idle hollow thunking.
"You'll see. When I get to Vegas, you'll see."
"'Cause your man's taking you there when he leaves," Maria said, not bothering to hide her skepticism.
"That's right," Sarah shot back. "And he'd take you too if you partied with him. He'd take us both. Man likes to party. All you got to do is be friendly."
She hesitated, then said,
"You know, I'd let you be his friend, too. I don't mind sharing."
"I know you don't."
"He's good people," Sarah insisted. "He don't even want nasty things. He's not like the Callies in the bars. And he's got that fine apartment in the Taiyang. You wouldn't believe how nice Phoenix looks when you got decent air filters and you're up high. Fivers live good."
"He's only a fiver for now." Sarah shook her head empathetically.
"For life, girl. Even if his company don't send him to Vegas next like he says, that man is a 5-digit forever."
She went on,
waxing romantic about her man's Fiverr lifestyle and her own prospects for after he left Phoenix. But Maria tuned her out. She knew why Sarah thought there was free water in Vegas. She'd seen it too. Hollywood Lifestyles had been following Tao Ox, and Maria had been watching from the doorway to one of the bars where Sarah tried to get men to buy her drinks. The star of Undaunted had pulled up in front of one of those fancy Vegas arcologies in an icy-looking Tesla. The camera had been following Tao Ox, but Maria had lost interest in the star when she saw the fountain. Huge-ass fountain, spraying water straight up into the air. Dancing water spouts. Water like diamonds in the sun. And little kids splashing their faces with it, just wasting it. It was like the fountains she'd spied inside the Taiyang Arcology, but without the security guards to keep you away. And it was outside. They were just letting water evaporate. Letting it go. When Maria saw that fountain, right out there in the open, she'd finally understood why her father had been trying to get them to Vegas. Why he'd been so sure that city was the place to go. But his plan hadn't worked out. They'd been a little too slow to move out of Texas. And then the State Independence and Sovereignty Act had put up walls they couldn't cross. Every single state realizing it was in trouble if it kept letting people flood in. "It's just temporary, mija," Papa had said. "It won't stay this way." But by that time, Maria had stopped believing so much in what Papa said. He was an old man, she realized. Viejo, right? Living according to an ancient map of the world that no longer existed. In Papa's head, things looked one way, but in Maria's experience, they were nothing the same. He kept saying that this was America, and America was all about freedom and doing what you wanted. But the crumbling America that they drove across, where Texans were strung up on New Mexico fence lines as warnings, most definitely wasn't the America he kept inside his head. His eyes were old. Ojos viejos. Her father couldn't see what was right in front of his face. People didn't get to come back to their houses like he said they would. You didn't get to stay in your hometown the way he said you would. You didn't see your school friends ever again, the way he said you would. Your mother wasn't there for your quinceañera the way he said she would. None of it worked out the way he said it would. At some point, Maria realized that her father's words were dust. She didn't correct him every time he was wrong, because she could tell he felt bad about being wrong about basically everything. Sarah made an impatient noise. "How much longer we got to wait?" "You should know," Maria goaded. "Your Fiverr is the one who told me about this." But Sarah cared only about keeping the Fiverr's hands on her body and making sure his party plans always focused on her. Maria, on the other hand, had listened to the man's words. "It's market price," the Fiverr had said. "If it weren't for that, Phoenix would never permit those Red Cross pumps, and Texans would be sucking dust on the I-10 and dying out in Chandler." The man had been pouring habanero salsa over cochinita pibil, a meal he claimed wasn't Mexican at all, but Yucatecan, which to him seemed to justify the fact that he was spending more on the white tablecloth meal than Maria and Sarah spent on a week's rent. "Market pricing keeps control of everything." He'd gotten onto the topic of Red Cross pumps because they'd been talking about Mary Perry's and all the faith trinkets they sold in their revival tents. And then, Maria had said something about how Mary Perry's always set up their prayer tents next to relief pumps because they could use water as bait to get people to listen to them preach. Sarah had given Maria a nasty look for reminding the man that they lived anywhere near relief pumps, but the Fiverr had perked right up at the mention of water. "Those pumps and those prices are probably the only smart thing Phoenix has done for water," he said. "Too little too late, but you know, better late than never." He winked at Maria. "And hey, it gives Mary Perry's a new way to recruit." The man wanted Maria. She could see it in the hopeful way he kept his eyes on her body and barely paid attention to Sarah. But he was polite about it. He at least made the effort to try to impress her with all his geeky knowledge of hydrology, even as he edged around the question of whether Maria could be bought.
"You just gotta meet up with us," Sarah had said. "Smile at whatever he's talking about. Make him feel like he's a big man. He's, like, into water and shit. Loves talking about drill rigs and groundwater. Just listen and act like you care."
But to Maria's surprise, she did care. And the more the fiver talked, the more it became apparent to her that men like him saw the world through different eyes than her father had. Maria's father had seen the world cloudy, but this hydrologist saw the world clear. Michael Rattan, senior hydrology specialist, IBIS LTD, lived high up in the Taiyang arcology and understood what was happening with the world. He spoke a language of acre-feet of water, spring runoff and CFS, and snowpack depths. He spoke of rivers and groundwater. And because he saw the world true and accepted it, instead of living in denial, he was never blindsided. He told Maria how the earth held hundreds of millions of gallons of water deep underground. Ancient water that had seeped down into it when glaciers melted. He described this world to Maria, hands darting, outlining geological strata, sandstone formations, talking about Halliburton drill soundings, telling her about aquifers. Aquifers. Whole huge underground lakes. Of course they were almost pumped dry now, but long ago there had been vast amounts of water down there. "It's not like the old days," the hydrologist had said. "But if you drill deep enough and frack right, you can open things up. Water will perk okay." He shrugged. "At least in most places, there's still an aquifer or two you can crack open and get a little water flowing. Down here, though, it's tougher. Mostly you just got the empty aquifers that Arizona fills up with CAP water."
"CAP water?
The Central Arizona Project?" He'd smirked at her ignorance. "Seriously?" Sarah kicked Maria under the table, but Rattan pushed aside wine glasses and laid his tablet on the table.
"Okay, here, look."
He opened a map of Arizona, then zoomed in on Phoenix. He pointed at a thin blue line that wrapped around the northern edge of the city and traced it west across the desert. In contrast to the lumps of ranged hills and mountains around Phoenix, the blue line was as straight as a ruler. It bent a few times, but it lay on the land as if someone had sliced the desert with an X-Acto blade. When he zoomed in, Maria could see the pale yellow of the desert and black rocky hills, a few lonely saguaros casting shadows, and then they were down on top of an emerald river of water, flowing along a concrete-lined canal. Rattan scrolled the map farther west, following the straight-ruled artificial river until it reached a wide pool of blue, glittering with desert sunlight. "Lake Havasu," it said. And feeding it, a squiggly blue line, Colorado River. "The CAP is Arizona's IV drip," Rattan explained. "It pumps water up out of the Colorado River and brings it 300 miles across the desert to Phoenix. Almost everything else that Phoenix depends on for water is done for. Roosevelt Reservoir is about dried up. The Verde and Salt Rivers are practically seasonal. The aquifers around here are all pumped to hell, but Phoenix still has a pulse because of the CAP. He drew back the map, showing the distance of the canal again, the slender line crossing all that desert. His finger lingered over it. "You see how tiny that line is, right? How far it's got to go, and it's coming out of a river that a lot of people want to use, too. California pumps out of Lake Havasu, too, and Catherine Case up in Nevada doesn't like letting water down into Havasu at all, because she needs it up in Lake Mead. And then you've got all the lunatics farther upriver in Colorado and Wyoming and Utah who keep saying they aren't going to send any water down to the lower basin states at all. They like to say it's theirs, their mountains, their snowmelt." He tapped the CAP's slender blue line again. "That's a lot of people fighting over too little water. And that's a mighty vulnerable line. Someone bombed the CAP once, almost knocked Phoenix off." He leaned back and grinned.
And that's why they're hiring people like me. Phoenix needs backups. If someone comes after them again,
he made a dismissing gesture.
They're done for. But if I find a decent aquifer, Phoenix is golden. They can even grow again.
Will you find something? Maria asked. Ratan laughed.
Probably not, but people will grab after whatever mirage they think will save them if they're thirsty enough. So I go out with my maps and my drilling crews and I look busy and I tell people where to punch holes in the desert, and Phoenix keeps hoping we'll come back with some motherload of aquifers so they can stop worrying about how they stand on the Colorado River and they can stop looking over their shoulders at Vegas and California. If I find some new magical water source, they'll be saved. I guess it could happen. I've heard of miracles. Mary Perry should believe. Jesus walked on water, so maybe he makes aquifers too.
The man had laughed at that. But afterward, Maria had dreamed about aquifers. In her dreams, they were always vast lakes, deep underground, cooler and more inviting than any abandoned basement, huge caverns filled with water. Sometimes she dreamed that she rowed a boat across those wet cathedral spaces, with stalactites phosphorescing overhead, like the body paint Sarah wore when she hunted her customers in the dance clubs of the Golden Mile. The roof of the cavern had glowed, and Maria had drifted across those dark reflecting waters, listening to water dripping, trailing her fingers in the soft, cool liquid. Sometimes she dreamed that her family was in the boat with her, and sometimes her father even rowed, carrying them across to China. And now Maria sat in the darkness beside the oasis of the Red Cross China Friendship Pump and waited to find out if she could see the world as clearly as Sarah's hydrologist. And if Sarah didn't understand, well, Maria would try to help her see clear, too. It's market price, girl. The price on the pump right here is all about how much water is down underground. When it gets low, the price goes up so people will slow down and not take so much. When the aquifer gets full, the price goes down because they're not so worried about running out. And sometimes the big vertical farms that the Chinese made stop pumping water so they can dry out for harvest. And they do it all at once, so it fools the water level monitors, makes them think there's enough water for everyone. So then sometimes the price... The pump's blue glow flickered and dropped to $6.66. Went back up to $6.95. It flickered again. $6.20. And then back up to $6.95. You see that? Maria asked. Sarah sucked a breath in surprise.
Whoa.
You stay with the wagon. Maria sidled closer to the pump. It was late. No one else was watching. No one else had noticed yet. She didn't want them to notice. Didn't want anyone to see what she was about to do. The price dropped to $6, then kicked up a nickel as someone's automated pumps put orders in on the water that was deep down below her feet. But each time the price seemed to dip lower before it went back up. Maria reached into her bra and pulled out the wadded, sweaty bills she kept safe against her skin. On the pump, the digital readout flickered. Prices changing. $6.95. $6.90. $6.50. It was dropping. Maria was sure of it. Farmers were still shunting water into drip fields, getting their subsidized price. But the big vertical farms had suddenly stopped pumping, just as the hydrologists had said they would, preparing for a harvest that happened only a few times a year. And here she was, standing beside the pump, watching the numbers. $5.95. $6.05. The price was definitely falling. Maria waited, her heart beating faster. Around her, a crowd began to take notice and press close. $6.15. People started running, seeing finally what was happening. Word spread into the Mary Perry tents and pulled people away from lighting candles at the Santa Muerte shrine to look. But Maria was already there in the sweet spot. She had her bottles ready. She'd guessed right. Market price,
falling like an angel coming down from heaven to kiss her black hair and whisper hope. Free fall. 585. 470. 360. It was lower than she'd ever seen. Maria began shoving bills into the slot, locking in prices as they kept falling. It didn't matter. In a couple more seconds, the big boys would sit up. Automated systems would catch the fall and start pumping. She kept jamming in bills. It was almost like buying futures. She used up all her cash, and still the price was dropping. "You got any money?" she shouted over to Sarah, not caring now who knew what she was doing. Not caring. She just wanted more of this chance.
"You serious? I'll pay you back."
Others were swarming over to gawp at the price, then running to tell others about the miraculous plunge. People began crowding the other spigots.
"Hurry up!"
Maria was almost shouting with frustration. It was a huge score, and she was here at the perfect moment.
"What if the price doesn't go back up?"
"It'll go up! It'll go up!" Reluctantly, Sarah handed her a 20. "This is my rent."
"I need small bills, nothing big. They won't let you buy big."
Sarah pulled out more cash, digging fuck money out of her bra. In the old days, the hydrologist had said, you could do stuff like stick a cool $100 into the machine and walk away with all those gallons. But at the top end of the system, some bureaucrat with a sharp pencil had figured out what was going on, and now you could only buy $5 increments. So Maria fed fives, watching the price, locking in gallons. Each increment a locked amount. $2.44. She'd never seen it go so low. Maria shoved bills in as fast as she could. The machine jammed. She tried to put more bills in, but it fought her. More people were crowding around now, plugging their own money into spigots, but hers was jammed. Maria swore and slammed her palm against the pump. She'd bought $50 worth of water, and with Sarah's cash, she had more than 80. And now what? All the other spigots were in use. Maria gave up and started filling. Already the price was rising, kicking up as rich people's automated household systems caught the price break and started pumping gallons into cisterns. Or maybe it was the Taiyang Arcology getting in on the action, accelerating the buy as it realized the surplus was worth gorging on. The numbers flickered. 290, 310, 450, 445, 550, 650, 705, 710. Order restored. Maria lugged her sloshing bottles over to the red wagon and dumped them in. $50 worth of water had just become $120. And as soon as she hauled it away from the oasis,
"How much did we make?"
Maria was afraid to say. It felt so good. Once, she got the water into the center of town and sidled up beside the Taiyang construction work. People wanted a cool cup of water there. And they had money. She knew the place from when her father had worked the high beams. All those crews coming off shift. And she would be there waiting for them, offering them relief from the heat. The workers weren't allowed to tap the factory, so if they wanted water out of work, they could either go line up at a friendship pump and pay the humanitarian pump price, or they could pay Maria and get water conveniently.
200, Maria said.
By the time we get all this water away from here, at least 200.
How much for me?
90. Maria could tell Sarah was impressed. The girl chattered the whole way home, thinking about her cut, excited that she'd made a 3-day score just from tacking along in the dark with Maria.
"You're just like my fiver," Sarah said. "You get this water thing."
"I'm not a player like that." But inside, a part of Maria thrilled at the compliment. Sarah's fiver saw the world clear. And now, Maria did too.
Chapter 4
Catherine Case's entourage of black Escalades crunched over broken glass and sheetrock fragments, leaving chalky trails. The lead vehicle filled Angel's rearview mirror, steel grillwork grinning. Matte black monster, sagging low under the weight of bomb-resistant armor, mirrored bulletproof windows and high-efficiency batteries. No logos to identify the Southern Nevada Water Authority. Black and anonymous. The photovoltaic skin of the lead Escalade barely gleamed, even under the blinding burn of noonday Vegas sun. More Escalades rolled in behind, packing the alley. SNWA security teams climbed from the vehicles and spread out, ducking into dusty abandoned houses, scouting angles. Mercenaries, Swiss exec people with M16s and bulletproof vests and mirrored military glass. Angel tilted the rear view, watching the teams ghost in and out of the alley's flanking ruins. He recognized a few. Chisholm and Sobel. Ortiz. The products of patriotic wars gone wrong. Military discards without VA or promised pensions, doing just fine in their new gig. Sobel appeared on a flat roof overhead, scanning sight lines for snipers. Angel remembered the man in a strip club deep below Cypress One's casinos, guzzling beer as a girl gyrated over him. "I get 5 times what I got in the army," Sobel had shouted over the bass thump. "Don't got to work out country at all. Plus no drones fragging you from 3 miles up. I'm telling you, Velasquez, it's a goddamn gold rush. You go private, you'll make a mint." "Easy work?" Angel had asked. "This gig? Shit, no. Last time it was this bad, had to be President Sapienza in Mexico City, right after he jacked the Sinaloans and the cartel states at the same time, tried to go indie."
"How'd that go?"
Sobel rolled his eyes as he pulled the girl into his lap.
"Well, I made it out alive."
Angel waited patiently. The SNWA teams worked. Icy air filled the Tesla, AC running off the solar skin of the vehicle. Another team slipped past the Tesla's tinted windows. Ortiz and a woman Angel didn't recognize, carefully stalking the edge of a ripped-to-pieces triplex, kicking through drifts of discarded clear sacks. The stucco walls of the condos were scrawled with sun-bleached epithets and images of Catherine Case, showing her where she could stick it if she thought she was going to get people to move out. The cleverest was a stylized coffin with the caption, "A Case for Case." The rest were less so. "Drink is you water on fuck?" The spray-painted curses and sexual threats were interrupted by jagged gashes in the siding where looters had stripped swamp coolers and chopped through walls to yank out wiring and copper water pipes. Cookie-cutter sprawl transformed into cookie-cutter litter. It was striking to Angel how similar every town looked after it lost its water. It didn't matter whether it was at the top of the Colorado River or the bottom. It could be Las Vegas or Phoenix, Tucson or Grand Junction, Moab or Delta. In the end, it was always the same. Traffic lights swinging blind on tumbleweed streets, shadowy echoing shopping malls with shattered window displays, golf courses drifted with sand and spiked with dead stick trees. At this very moment, Carver City was headed to the same place as the ruins here, just another victim of Catherine Case's clear, sharp eyes and sharper water knives. Ortiz appeared atop the triplex, looking down on the alley. Behind him, the jumbled curvatures of Catherine Case's latest venture, Cypress 3, stood tall against the muddy, smoky blue of the sky. The future, gleaming arrogantly over old Las Vegas wreckage. The Arcology's solar panels fluttered, tracking the sun, shading its walls, controlling temperature as they soaked up heat and light. Behind Cypress 3, sister arcologies 1 and 2 were also visible, and to their west, the borehole of Cypress 4 was marked by the rising lattice towers of construction cranes, flamboyantly draped with Chinese characters dangling down the sides in red and gold. Even from 2 miles away, Angel could read the Chinese characters.
Yuan Da Ji Tuan.
Angel couldn't sound out much Chinese, but those words he recognized. The Broad Group, a badass construction firm out of Changsha, did all the work for Case's husband and his real estate group. The Chinese knew how to get shit done, Case said. Knew how to make a joint venture profitable for everyone. With 3 examples of her arcology concept already up and running, it was easy to sell slots in the new ones. Now Cypress 4 was already oversubscribed, and Cypress 5 was on the drawing boards. Angel could still remember how hard the sales lady had pitched him as they walked through the central atriums of Cypress 1. They'd been surrounded by waterfalls and climbing vines, and yet this sales lady had tapped away on her tablet, showing him schematics, explaining how reliable the recycling systems were, describing how Cypress could run on its own water for up to 3 months at a stretch without even having to dip into the Colorado River, trying to explain something that Angel himself had helped create. People called Catherine Case a killer because her water knives cut so hard along the Colorado. But when Angel inhaled the eucalyptus and honeysuckle scents of Cypress, he knew they were wrong. Outside, there was only desert and death. But inside, surrounded by jungle greenery and koi ponds, there was life. And Catherine Case was a saint, offering salvation to her flock as she guided them to safety inside the technological wonders of her foresight. Ortiz passed Angel's Tesla again, peering inside, confirming that Angel was the only one in the car. A couple more Swiss exec people posted sentry at the alley mouth. Finally, Case's own Escalade crept into the alley, and the Queen of the Colorado stepped out. Slight and blonde, skirt clinging to her hips. Her high heels clicked over broken glass. Tiny waist, half jacket and dark blue over the gold shimmer of her blouse. A splash of makeup that made her eyes large and dark. In the blistering heat of the sun, the woman seemed too small and delicate to be the mastermind who turned towns into blowing dust. Angel could still remember standing in front of her, wearing ballistic armor, as she announced that she was cutting this very suburb's throat. One of her first conquests. He could still hear the angry rumble of the crowds, the way his military glass had lit up on activists' faces, a rainbow of threat assessment and object recognition, pattern matching for the raised handgun that would tell him it was time to take a bullet for his queen. What a fucking assignment. What a fucking offer. You want to stay? She'd asked when they first met. That had been before the training. Before Angel had an ID or a permit to live in Cypress. Before the Guardies. He'd barely been a person then. He remembered the heat and fear of the cages. The ammonia reek of clear sacks that had been used too many times. 30 people packed in a prison cell. All the pickpockets and hookers and bangers and cons who hadn't had the sense to make their cash the way Vegas wanted them to. And now, Vegas was going to lock them all into 18-wheelers and drive them south. Whoever made it down to the border, made it. Whoever roasted, roasted. The garbage truck, street crews called it. Don't get busted, Holmes. They put you in the garbage truck for sure. Catherine Case had had expensive shoes then, too. Strappy, delicate heels that clicked on the prison's cracked concrete, sharply punctuating the heavier tread of her Guardies escort's boots. Angel remembered the high heels for how they'd announced a change in the routine of the cages and made him peer out through the bars. He remembered staring at the strange, doll-like woman, thinking that if he could just get his hands around her neck.
All her gold and diamonds would make him one seriously rich cabrón. He remembered how she'd gazed back at him,